I wish they would just stay up there for the next half hour and we could enjoy the music. I mean, what a gift. Wow. Praise the Lord. All right. Before I pray, two things. One is, if you have a Bible, you want to go to Jeremiah 17. If you need a Bible, raise your hands. And if you did not get a bulletin this morning, raise your hands. You need this booklet. You should have received a bulletin with a booklet in it. So please make sure you have it, and raise your hands if you don't. And let's go to Jeremiah 17. Thank you. Wow, that's really something. Okay. Let's pray together. So, Lord, as we just sang, may you carry us home. May we live at home with you free. And Lord, may this message build on the words of that song. And may we not just sing it and know it in our heads. We pray that we may actually realize and experience what you won for us through Jesus at the cross and the resurrection. We may actually live in the joy of being home with you, married to you, and actually enjoying Sabbath rest with you. So speak to us, I pray, through this word of Jeremiah. Transform our community and our lives in Jesus' name. Amen. Now, in ancient times, life moved along very slowly. And one way you can see that is the way messages were communicated. So, for example, in ancient empires, mail was only delivered, that only governments could do it. Governments and kings and military powers were able to communicate messages from one place to another. For example, Cyrus the Great in 6th century BC, he had a network of runners that could ride on horseback from place to place, station to station, and they could do basically up to about 100 miles a day. Arabs later then pioneered messages through the use of pigeons, and the Greeks used athlete runners to run from place to place. In fact, Alexander the Great supposedly had one special runner that could do 148 miles in one day. It's pretty good. Now, up to the late 1700s, if you immigrated from one country to another and you left your family and your country behind, most likely they would be lost to you forever. And at that time, you would never hear from them again. You would never be able to communicate them to again. In 1848, the president of the United States, James Polk, it took him 6 months to get a letter delivered from Washington, D.C. to California. I'll give you a sense of the pace of life. Now, remember, some of you, because you're old, you used to write letters. You would actually go buy stamps. You'd walk to the post office to mail it. And then if you were mailing it to, say, the West Coast, it could take you 3 days to get there. And if you were mailing it overseas, 7 to 10 days, who knew, depending on how far overseas. So with the advent of email, Facebook, Twitter, blogs, ebooks, and social networks, I mean, the speed of messages is radically transformed. I mean, you can now, and I was on an airplane this past week, you can be 5 miles above the earth at 500 miles an hour, and you can now be on the internet, as many of you know. For $12, you get a little contraption, you can log on. And there was a lawyer seating above me to the right. He was sending emails instantly all over the world. Shanghai, Latin America, Africa, 5 miles above the earth. Things have changed quite a bit. We log on to email and download messages when we wake up, when we're having coffee, when we're on the subway, when we're sitting in traffic, I saw you, when we're on vacation. If there's a moment of silence, we press that refresh button and we check the email, you know. One CEO of a marketing firm, he wrote, "I'm tied to my laptop as if I were on an oxygen machine. I must cart it around to keep breathing." So, as you know, a new word entered our vocabulary through Webster in 2006, and it was the word crackberry. We have blackberries, and so it was the addictive nature of it. They coined a new word. It's actually in the dictionary now, crackberry. And because it's like crack, getting off it. And psychologists are now actually arguing back and forth. They're trying to get into what's called a DSM-4, one of the new pathologies, internet addiction. Because email addiction has all the qualities of other addictions. And so the result is more people are working overtime than ever in our country, and actually in the Western world. And the boundary between work and personal life has become very blurry. And the cycle of overworking and multitasking and doing is in such overdrive. It may just be compared to the Industrial Revolution in terms of its impact on Western culture. And so, I mean, Americans now officially sleep one less hour a night than 20 years ago. I'm tired just thinking about it. I lost 7 hours this week of sleep. And it's the lowest ever in the United States history of people's average hour of sleep. So here we are. You know, we're in this culture now going 24/7, hurry, busy, in this connected world. And this is having clearly a large impact on our ability to relate to other people, relationships. But most significantly, it's really impacting our spirituality and our walk with Christ, our relationship with God. Now, our goal at New Life Fellowship and our mission statement is that we're a community that points people to a deep personal relationship with Jesus Christ. That's why we exist. And you know, there's nothing more important than a relationship with the living God through Jesus. And last week, we made the analogy to marriage and that my identity is I'm married to Jesus. But our goal here at New Life is that you have communion with Jesus. You have a direct experience with Him. You don't live through other people's experience. You have your own personal relationship, your own personal experience with the living Jesus Christ. It's our goal as a church. And thus our need to slow down and so that we can be with Him. And so our mission statement then talks about embracing a rule of life out of which we then do our mission. But this rule of life, as you hear us talk about all the time, is really about slowing down to be with God. That's the thrust. And so today, we're going to move into really kind of like a parenthesis series this Lent. And we want to grab hold of an ancient spiritual formation practice that has been around 3,500 years that has helped, it was meant by God to be a gift to slow us down to be with Him. And it's called Sabbath keeping. And thus that booklet that's in your bulletin. And Sabbath keeping is a bottomless truth. It's so rich that the more you get into Sabbath to understand it, the more profound it becomes. And it expands its breadth because it's about an entire reorientation of your life around God. And it sets the whole rhythm of your days. In fact, as one famous rabbi wrote, the Sabbath is the most precious present humankind has ever received from the treasure house of God. Now, that may be a bit of an overstatement. But as you enter into Sabbath and experience it, because Sabbath, like other biblical truths, has to be understood from the inside of doing it. It's like prayer. If you don't pray, you hear a talk on prayer, you're like, that sounds interesting. But when you start praying, then prayer makes sense. Well, the same thing with Sabbath keeping. We're going to invite you to enter into Sabbath keeping. But as you enter into it, the things I'm going to say today are going to make a lot of sense. But for some of you, it's going to be kind of challenging to grasp it all. But we are going to enter into corporately the next 7 weeks for Lent, which begins next Wednesday. We are asking you to fast from all the busyness, the 24/7, all the hurry. And we are asking you we're going to do it together, keep Sabbath for 7 weeks. And we're going to ask that you do it around you choose one of two different time frames. First choice, which is either from 6 p.m. Saturday night to 6 p.m. Sunday night, which is when most of us in this room are not working, that you would receive the gift of Sabbath from God. The second choice is if you cannot do that because of work, that you would choose then 6 p.m. Friday to 6 p.m. Saturday. We're asking you to choose one of those two times because we've been talking about Sabbath for a very long time. From 1996, we actually started New Life Fellowship Church. Then a real thrust in 2003, and then we really brought it in 2006. But we've always encouraged people to do it individually. But we recognize over time that this is perhaps that doing it communally, we need the support of the whole community. And so as I will discuss in just a few minutes, we're going to invite you to join with the rest of the body and actually lighting a candle to start it at 6 p.m. with certain qualities and elements to it. And then at 6 p.m. the following day, actually light a candle and you bring it to a close. But you know that when you do this, you have 1,000 other people doing it with you at the same time. And we are engaging in this great ancient spiritual formation practice called Sabbath keeping. And, of course, this is modeled after the Hebrew sense of, you know, beginning Friday sunset to Sunday, Saturday sunset. So some of you will have to choose a different day because of the nature of your work. You don't have control of your work schedules, and we appreciate that. Like Paul says, it's not so much the day, Romans 14. It's the rhythm and consistency that matters. So this sermon today belongs to the Jeremiah series, but it's also launching us into a sub-series for this Lenten next 7 weeks. So here's my prayer for you, that you're going to build a rhythm into your life. You're going to experiment these next 7 weeks, and you're going to build some tradition into your family, into your personal life, and you're going to become intentional, not just for the next 7 weeks, but my prayer is that this is going to be the rest of your life, that it'll inform you. And it will ultimately infuse the other 6 days. Just like you've got customs and traditions around birthdays and anniversaries and weddings and holidays, you will now have certain traditions that you will develop your own around Sabbath. Okay, so with that, let's go to Jeremiah 17. We're going to read our text. It begins in verse 19. Now, I want you to note this before I start reading. You've heard a little bit about Jeremiah already from a few messages. But as you read through the whole book, he's talking to them and speaking for God as God is basically outraged that here they are, the people of God, they're involved in murder, they're involved in child sacrifice along with the other pagan people and pagan gods, they're involved in idolatry, they're involved in drinking from the wrong wells and sleeping with the wrong people. That was last week's message. They're addicts to their prostitution of running after other gods. And yet, he begins talking about Sabbath here in a very powerful way. You're like, why is he talking about Sabbath? I mean, it seems so insignificant compared to the other problems they got going on in their lives. But Jeremiah understands, and as you'll see, God understands that this issue of Sabbath is not simply as simple as what you do in this 24-hour period. It cuts to the core of your spirituality. It touches profound issues in your walk with God, especially when it's done right. And so it is not to be separated. So with that, chapter 17, verse 19, let's begin reading as Jeremiah speaks. This is what the Lord said to me, chapter 17, verse 19. Go and stand at the gate of the people through which the kings of Judah go in and out. Stand also at all the other gates of Jerusalem. Say to them, hear the word of the Lord, O kings of Judah, and all people of Judah, and everyone living in Jerusalem who come through these gates. For this is what the Lord says. Be careful not to carry a load on the Sabbath day or bring it through the gates of Jerusalem. Do not bring a load out of your houses or do any work on the Sabbath, but keep the Sabbath day holy. Circle that word, holy. As I commanded your forefathers. Yet they did not listen or pay attention. They were stiff-necked and would not listen or respond to discipline. But if you are careful to obey me, declares the Lord, and bring no load through the gates of the city on the Sabbath, but keep the Sabbath day holy by not doing any work, then kings will sit on David's throne, will come through the gates of the city with their officials. And then he goes on, the rest of the chapter, but all these blessings are going to follow in your life. But if you don't, he says in verse 25, there's going to be some consequences. The city is going to get wiped out by the Babylonians, okay, in an unquenchable fire. So what he's talking about here is a 24-hour period that he calls them and says, I want you to re-engage Sabbath. Now he's going back to, Jeremiah is going back to the time of Moses and the Exodus and Deuteronomy to the Ten Commandments. When they came out of Egypt, they had lived for 400-plus years as slaves in Egypt. And when they were there in Egypt, they lived according to Egyptian culture as slaves. They lied, they had adultery, they coveted each other's spouses, they were idols, they bore false witness, they did not honor their parents, they're rebellious. But in the middle of the Ten Commandments, he puts in the fourth about Sabbath. And the fourth, good rabbis will tell you that if you don't keep the fourth, you can't keep the other nine. And it is a central commandment right in the middle out of which everything flows. And it reads as follows. The Lord says, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord our God. On it you shall not do any work. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that's in them, but he rested on the Sabbath day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. And he bases it, the second time he repeats this commandment is in Deuteronomy 5, and he says, you were slaves in Egypt for 400 years. You are no longer slaves, you are free. You never had a day off. You worked 7 days a week. You weren't even human beings. You were treated as things, as its, as cogs in a machine. So now I invite you to rest. Every seventh day, you are not to work. You're to enjoy my love. Let me take care of you. Rest in grace. You have value and worth that has nothing to do with what you produce. And you are sacred. You're a human being. I love you. You are not a tool of production. You are free. And so it's a gift to receive because you are built, he says, to actually this rhythm of work and then Sabbathing each week on the seventh day. And actually, Jesus restores this commandment in Mark 2. He says, you weren't made for Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for you. This is not a new legalism. This is not meant to be a, you know, like you're doing God a favor. No, this is a gift given to you. And Jesus actually restored its original intention. And again, just like Bible study and prayer, you're not saved by Bible study. You're not saved by prayer. You're saved by Jesus alone. Colossians, you know, 2. The reality is found in Christ, not Sabbath keeping. But it's a gift to enable us to actually live in that love of God and in his rest. And so what happens in Jeremiah here is they don't care about Sabbath. They're not doing Sabbaths anymore. They're just working like it's every other day, in and out of the gates. And they're not keeping it holy. You'll notice the word holy is repeated, you know, in verse 20 and later on. It's verse 21 and others. The Sabbath day is holy, which means it's set apart. It's distinct. Think of all the time in a given week. This 24-hour period, God says, is set apart. It's not the same. Like God has chosen, in the Bible, you'll see holy tithe, holy people, holy land, holy scriptures. That means these things are set apart. And God says, the first thing I'm setting apart in the universe is time. A 24-hour period is distinct. It's chosen. It's separate from the rest of the time in a week. It's holy to the Lord our God. It's to be a Sabbath. Now, I like what Eugene Peterson says. A Sabbath has certain qualities to it that make it a Sabbath to the Lord. A day off is not a Sabbath. A day off, he calls a bastard Sabbath. Because that really, you're making it like it is, but it isn't. A Sabbath is to the Lord our God. That's its distinctiveness. That its uniqueness. And what Jeremiah says here, he goes, hey, listen, your ancestors, in verse 22, they didn't listen. They didn't pay attention. They were stiff-necked and stubborn. And he says in verse 24, here's your choice. If you will listen to me and observe Sabbath, he goes, I promise you, all these blessings. But if you don't, and you keep ignoring it, and you do what all the other nations do, I'm telling you, there's going to be consequences. And because for Jeremiah, what he's saying here is that so much hangs on Sabbath keeping. And I like what one commentator said. He said, Sabbath is a deep symbol of Israel's relationship with God. That violating Sabbath is like throwing your wedding ring in the face of your spouse. Violating Sabbath is like burning the national flag in terms of what statement it makes. Violating Sabbath indicates the end of this unique relationship. But when it's done in the right spirit, it's saying, I trust in the power and the life of God to carry me and sustain me. I like Israel, I'm different. I'm not like all the other people and nations. I'm chosen. I belong to God. I'm surrendered to the will of God, not my stubborn will, not me trying to make it happen. My whole life is centered on God. So you can keep Sabbath, of course, and have a lousy relationship with God. Because it does include some other things that require it to have a great relationship with God. But it's a key element when done right. It's very foundational. So this word Sabbath comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat. Now, we're not going to do a Hebrew word study here. So just believe me when I tell you that in that word Shabbat is the meaning stop, rest, delight, and then contemplate, I add, because Sabbath is all about God. All right? And it's actually in speaking about a 24-hour period when it's given in Genesis. So what I'd like to do, and so it's meant to be the way that we actually organize our lives. And God actually built it into your nature. He hardwired it into your body to actually keep Sabbath and have a rhythm. So what I'd like to do is unpack it a bit and these four elements. And then I want to actually talk about application for us in going out of here. So let's talk about just the four qualities of a biblical Sabbath. Okay, this, so you say, how do I organize this thing? Well, here's the qualities. The first is stop. It's built into the word. In Jeremiah's time, they were not stopping. They just kept working. It's one day rolling into the next, 24/7. Sabbath is first and foremost, it's a day that I stop. I deliberately stop doing or producing, and I experience grace. What Sabbath is about is God is God. He is on the throne, and I am not. Many of us, you have so many goals and activities for this week, you need a 10-day week. And you need about a 21-hour day being awake that and then to get everything done on your to-do list. And the problem is you were not created to be that busy. You were not created to accomplish so much. And that's why this cuts to the core of your spirituality. Sabbath sets me free and sets you free. You don't have to finish your to-do list. You don't have to accomplish all your goals. In fact, you won't. You will die with all these goals that will never get accomplished. And you will die with unfinished projects. And here's the amazing thing. The world will go on just fine. It's amazing. It's incredible. But you see, Sabbath is about stopping because you see God's on the throne. And he assures us things will not fall apart when you stop. And God is at work taking care of the universe, and he is managing things quite well. Now, Sabbath, in fact, if I was going to give you my best image of Sabbath is right out of Manhattan. It's that store called B&H. Some of you know it. It's not far from Penn Station. I am not being paid to make an advertisement right now, okay? It's an electronic store, hundreds of millions of dollars of business per year. It's 9th or 10th Avenue and 34th and 35th. Street. And if you go there, and I've been there on a Friday, it's run by Hasidic Jews from Brooklyn. And if you get there like 3, 4 o'clock, and dusk is coming, these folks are closing up shop. Okay, you have to understand, hundreds of people in the shop. I mean, I'm there with my money and my wallet, okay? And they're shutting the place down. I'm like, do you want my money? But they're going to Sabbath, and they're getting ready for Sabbath to get home to celebrate. But it's shut all day Saturday. Do you know how much money they're losing? Saturday in Manhattan. They don't care. I'm sitting there saying, I'm like, they don't care. They're going to have their Sabbath to the Lord their God, whether I like it or not, and they're not taking my money. They are pushing me out the gates of the door, and they want me out of here. Now, what's so ironic is I know many Christians that for a season, we'll say, Pastor Pete, I'm not going to be around for the next 6 months or 12 months. I got to work overtime. He said, I really want to take my family to Cancun. I really want to get to Disney World, so you won't be seeing me for a while. I mean, we have such a low view of Sabbath. It's so irrelevant to us. Our values are so mixed up, and we're judging them, of course, for being way off base. But you see, the point of stopping is I'm trusting that God is on the throne. He's going to take care of me. As one theologian said, Sabbath is about wasting time. No measurable goal is accomplished. This is why it's such a killer. And the theologian wrote, to fail to see the value of doing nothing is to miss the heart of Christianity. Sabbath is a structure to build doing nothing into our schedules. Now, as we stop, we recognize God's on the throne, I'm limited, but it leads me then to rest, which is also built into the Hebrew word. Now, in Jeremiah, they were anxious. The Babylonians were coming. The pagan cultures were working. Their marketplace was going 7 days a week. They didn't rest. Sabbath is about rest. Now, some of you know this picture here of Sisyphus out of Greek mythology. Remember him? He was condemned to repeat forever the same meaningless task of work, pushing the boulder up the mountain. Then when he got to the top, he'd roll back down on it, push it up and roll back. You know, and he never paused, never got a stop. Never rested, and never enjoyed the fruit of his work. It was just work, 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 work. Now you see, you were built by God to rest. Work and rest. And so you're made in God's image. And he created you like him. And God himself worked and rested in Genesis 1 and 2. So when you work, 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 7 days a week, week after week, you violate the image of God in you. You're sucking nutrients from the soil that you don't have. But when we stop and we rest and the soil is fallow, just like in the Old Testament, God say every seventh year, the soil is not to be worked because nutrients are coming back into that soil for the next season. And God says your soil of your heart and your soul needs to do nothing, to stop and to rest and delight and contemplate so that I can feed nutrients back into it. But some of you, you violate yourself by work and work and work and work. and you're empty, and you're burnt, and you're tired, and you're cranky because God never built you to go, go, go and work like Sisyphus here. And so what we're doing is we're resting, we're stopping, and we're resting from a number of things. We rest, of course, from work and productivity and accomplishment. Now, I'm talking about work that's paid and work that's unpaid. In a culture that defines itself by work, we overvalue work. And I believe God made us to work, but we overvalue it. And so there's enormous pressure on us internally because we have families of origins and cultures that say, what are you producing? What are you doing, you loser? You know, and externally, our culture is like, what have you done? What have you produced? And so what happens is doing or producing becomes the only thing that gives meaning to our existence. I mean, yet the center point of my life is to revolve around the living God. And so Sabbath, for some of you, seems so stupid. It's like, this is absurd. It's like lazy. I mean, we feel guilty. That's why I love talking about monks. Because almost inevitably, when I talk about monasteries, somebody will, but they're wasting their lives praying and contemplating God. What are they doing? What are they producing? And a Sabbath is not a break in your work. Sabbath does not exist so that you're a more effective worker the other 6 days, although it might be. Sabbath is not a means to an end of better work. No, Sabbath is not a pick-me-up. Sabbath is to the Lord our God. That's it. It is to Him. That is the value. And so for me, for example, a great challenge of Sabbath with my work is, okay, because I work at a computer and email and phone calls a lot around New Life Fellowship and writing and some outside speaking. So I gotta stay away from my phone. And, you know, my home office and New Life, you. And, you know, I don't answer emails or phone calls that come outside for my family. But I try to slow down and rest. And this is what the great challenge of resting from work is. I don't define myself by what I do. And everything's going to be okay. God's on the throne. So it's amazing talking to students. We have a lot of students here. Yeah, Pastor P, I got an exam. I'm trying to get into grad school, you know, the law boards, you know, the MCATs. Oh, my gosh, you know. And it's like everybody's studying 18 hours a day. No one's sleeping. The exam is next week, you know. And I said, yeah, so your work is study. So you're right. For a 24-hour period, rest. No study. Trust God with it. Oh, you know, it's like, because really, this Sabbath thing is touching our physical bodies. It's like an addiction. That to get off of this adrenaline, to get your brain is hardwired. This is about a new culture of God rewiring your brain and your physiology. And so I also rest from hurry. You know, I rest from hurry. I, on Sabbath, you're basically getting off the adrenaline rush. And I know this is really tough. You actually try to speak more slowly. I'm not succeeding very well in the other 6 days, but you know, you're not hurrying. You're not racing to a red light. You know, I mean, I rush. I don't even know where I'm going. I'm just in a rush. I try not to finish people's sentences. I was unsuccessful yesterday with my wife. But I rest from multitasking. Multitasking is to do more than one task at a time. So that means, you know, as you know, many of you, I'm on the phone. You're on the phone. You're watching TV. And you're eating dinner. Or you're eating, you're doing your homework, you're watching a movie, and you're doing Facebook updates. Or you're driving, and you're on the cell phone, and you're drinking coffee, and you're listening to the radio. Or you're talking to me, but you're also making notes to plan the rest of your day. And you're also checking your email every time you hear a beep. So, you know, and Stanford recently, in 2009, they did a big study on multitasking. And they set out to learn what gives multitaskers their edge. They went into it actually like admiring these multitaskers. What's their gift? And here is what the lead researcher of that study said. He says, we kept looking for what they are better at, and we didn't find it. That was great. That was his conclusion. But on Sabbath, you actually stop multitasking. You rest from it. And so now you try it. You actually talk to someone on Sabbath because you're not doing anything anyway. And you're talking to them and you actually give them like your undivided attention. They're in shock. You're You listen to music and maybe you close your eyes. You wash the dishes without the TV on or the radio. Try this. Try just driving to church without any radio, you know, or music. And, you know, it's basically, this is Lent season. See it as you're fasting from multitasking. You know, you're going to allow yourself one day a week to focus on one thing at a time. It's a gift coming from the hand of God. Well, we also fast from anxiety. I can add to the list. You can add to this list as well. Anxiety and worry. When Jerry and I, I try not to go near anything, taxes, budgets, children problems, not the day to think about it, you know. Making decisions, catching up on errands, you know, household chores that you didn't do during the week. It's not the catch-up day. Laundry, cooking, cleaning, shopping. I rest from my to-do list, which means that's why you have to plan to have a Sabbath. If you don't plan to have a Sabbath, you won't have a Sabbath. So whether it's, again, and for the other days, 6 days have got to be intentional. When am I going to clean the house? When am I going to do the laundry? When am I going to pay the bills, et cetera? I know for me, my sermon's got to be done. You know, by Thursday night, I got to be finished because I just let it down. It's often not finished. I say, it's the best I can do. I get up early Sunday morning. I hit it again. And I say, God, here it is. But I'm not going to be perfectionistic with this thing and carry it day and night, which is very easy to do. And for us, one of our things is no have-tos and shoulds. I mean, if it's a should, forget it. I try not to do it. And there are some, of course, that come our way. But if you're retired, for example, but you're going to work out, what's your work, unpaid work that you do during the week, Sabbath? Rest from it. If you're unemployed and you're looking for a job, you know what? For Sabbath, don't look for a job. Enjoy a Sabbath to the Lord our God and rest and delight and contemplate Him. Then there's a third quality of a biblical Sabbath. It's called delight. God delights on the first Sabbath in His creation. He goes, this is very good, He says in Genesis 1:31. This is pleasing, this is wonderful, this is beautiful, is what it says in Hebrew. Now, I come from a family with abuse, and if you come from a family with abuse or addiction, my family wasn't good in delight. We were good in work and produce. But Sabbath is about delighting in creation, in all the gifts of God that surround us that we're too busy to actually appreciate. We're just running through life. And so we cultivate this aha thing. So I wish I had an orange, you know, but I say this was an orange. This invisible thing here, you know. And so it's like you're going to eat this orange. You're like, all right. So you actually look at it. Colorful. You know, round. And you, oh my gosh, she's got an orange. If we had brownie points from God, you would get one. It's yours right there. All right. A brownie point for the second row. So I look at the orange, okay? And I actually feel the orange, you know? Like, wow, a texture from God. Like, wow, you know? And then I smell it. I don't smell much yet. But if I opened it up, I'd have a little smell, right? And then actually taste it. I mean, try it. I'm actually taste your food and that gift. And I love going to bakery shops, you know, smelling bakery, smelling food. And it's very radical to actually taste your food. I mean, I spent much time, you know, I'm eating, standing, walking, you know, reading a newspaper, driving. Not only did I not taste my food, I don't even know what I ate. So Sabbath is about delighting in nature and trees and flowers and beaches and the gift of our senses, our taste buds, and delighting in people and children and just life. That's why, you know, if you read some of the old rabbinical writings on Sabbath, they would say, Sabbath is not a time for grieving. It's not a time for fasting. It's not a time for sadness over your sin. This is a time for joy on Sabbath. And so, actually, they forbade grief. It's very fascinating. All right, and then finally, the last quality of Sabbath keeping is to contemplate. Because God is the center of Sabbath. And that's why Saturday night to Sunday night is perfect for us in our context, because you have worship built right into the middle. But I'm contemplating God. My great illustration for Sabbath, which helps me the most, is Sabbath is like a snow day coming every week as a gift from God. On a snow day, and you had one this past week, hopefully, unless you turned on your technology and worked from home. But on a snow day, all the stores are closed, the roads are blocked. You have a gift of a day to do whatever you want, take a nap, read a good book, watch a movie, you know, talk to some friends. It's a no-obligation day every week. That's a Sabbath. So you get 52 snow days every year. 7 weeks of snow days. It's pretty good, isn't it? And so, which you don't work. And so I stop, I rest, I delight, and I contemplate God. And so this is a gift to receive, as Jesus said, a gift of his mercy. And this is really the heart of the gospel. So here's God's goal is that you would do this weekly, and I would do it weekly for a 24-hour period, and that actually these qualities would infuse the other 6 days. In other words, that I'd actually be more present, contemplating God throughout the week while I'm working, while I'm active, I'm delighting, and I'm resting. So I've got this quality of Sabbath that's informing my other 6 days. That's really the goal of God here. But he knows we need that Sabbath for that to even happen. So here's the invitation for you today. I'm inviting you as a community. We are, as a community, going to engage in Sabbath for the next 7 weeks. And I'm inviting you to choose one of two times, 6 p.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday to Sunday or Friday to Saturday. And you'll see downstairs, there's going to be books and there's going to be materials being sold to help you. You've got this pamphlet that was given you today, which is a short half a chapter from Emotionally Healthy Spirituality on Sabbath. We got permission to republish it and give it out for free here with it, New Life. So this is yours to take home and read. And there's two great books that we've got available that we chose that we felt are the best books on Sabbath and very practical for us. They're available at the book table and downstairs. We got whatever cost we got it from, we're passing it on to you. We'll have some candles for sale there. We'll have, you'll see pens. We made a pen so you can journal as you're. And on the pen it says, delight, stop, rest, delight, and contemplate. Not bad, huh? And then they even got, the youth got T-shirts, you know, the youth. And there it is, Sabbath, you know. And so there is stop, rest, delight, contemplate. And so whatever they're asking you downstairs, all the profits are going to the Community Development Corporation, you know, which is wonderful. So get yourself a T-shirt. But the point is we're trying as a community to together we're going to actually engage in Sabbath. So you'll see candles as well. Actually, we can't believe they're almost all sold out from first service. But we're going to ask that we as a community begin Sabbath at the same time with a candle. Now, one of my regrets, I was older in life. Our kids were a little bit older when we started Sabbath keeping. But that Jerry and I didn't build in more tradition, in more ritual into our Sabbath as a family. Our kids were a little bit older. But we did in the later years, more recently. And so candles are, you know, have been in Judaism, have been used, you know, anciently and presently all over the place. And there's something remarkable about candles. And when you really light one and you're present to it, what it does to time and space, they're peaceful, they're transfixing, they're ancient. And I know there's a candle craze going on out there among New Agers and all that. But they're not the first ones to figure out that candles calm you down. They just help you be still and help you get centered. And they always begin and end Jewish Sabbaths. And I love Orthodox Jewish families. You know, they will begin a day or two in advance preparing for Sabbath, getting their meals ready and cleaning up the house so it's somewhat tidy and get their candles all set and get their groceries purchased or just getting set for Sabbath. And we want to invite you to do the same. And so you'll even notice, unlike, oh, there's some of the prices, candles are cheaply and all that stuff. And it's free. There's all these free resources online. And you'll notice one of the free resources, we've been working on frequently asked questions on there. So you'll notice, for example, here's some frequently asked questions. You know, how do I go about deciding what specific activities are acceptable and unacceptable on the Sabbath? You know, isn't Jesus our Sabbath rest? Is this another works righteousness? How do I cease from the work of parenting? What do I do about my children who aren't interested in Sabbath? What about sports and extracurricular activities that your children may be involved in? What do I do about my tendency to perfectionism? Some of you are so perfectionistic, you've got to get Sabbath right. And you ruin it. All right, did I stop? Did I rest? Did I delight? And you're always mad at yourself and trying to package it efficiently. You know, some of us, we want a McSabbath, like McDonald's, a McSabbath. Quick, easy, convenient, user-friendly, no muss, no fuss, no sacrifice, in and out, an hour, okay? So perfectionist, calm down, all right? This is going to be an experiment for the next 7 weeks. We want you to engage it. And I want you to try to imagine yourself, when you light that candle at 6 o'clock, there's hundreds and hundreds of other people that are going to be lighting it with you. And then when you light it again, at the end of that 24-hour period, that there'll be hundreds and hundreds of people doing it with you as well, that will kind of sense doing it as a community together. So Sabbath really, if I could summarize it, Sabbath is not the result of a vacation. Because you can go on vacation and have days off, you have not Sabbathed. Nor are you enjoying the fruit of Sabbath. Sabbath is a condition of the soul. Sabbath is about an inward calm. Sabbath is about letting things happen. Sabbath is about being receptive to God and His gifts. Sabbath is about recognizing that you are not in control. Sabbath is about not grabbing. Sabbath is about letting loose the reins of life. And Sabbath is about letting God be God. It's actually a gateway to freedom when it's done right. And one begins to receive gifts from God, revelations, insights, intuitions that you weren't even looking for. They begin to almost cascade into your soul and you say, where'd that even come from? So I want to invite you to let God transform you and let God take you off the addictive drug of doing and actually stop, rest, delight, and contemplate for a 24-hour period each week. This is real wealth. I don't know if you have a financial counselor or not. Not a bad idea. But this is wealth. To be able to withdraw time from useful and productive ends and give it to God, back to God. It's like you're throwing away all earthly calculation to the wind. Doesn't matter how they calculate time. Such ability to waste time before God. Friends, that is true wealth. You're a rich person, incredibly rich. On Sabbath, we taste heaven. On Sabbath, we taste eternity. On Sabbath, we taste our death when we will see Him face to face. You taste it every Sabbath that the world's going to go on just fine without you when you see Him in that eternal Sabbath rest face to face. So it's so profound. As one rabbinical scholar said, if you don't like the taste of eternity now, what makes you think you're going to like it later? But every Sabbath you taste it, you stop, rest, delight, and contemplate God. Just heavenly. It's such a countercultural act. So let's do this. I want to close with some thoughtful steps. Number one is decide on a day. If you are married, I'm going to ask you to talk to your spouse. If you are single, think about speaking with some friends with whom you can do this together. Not that you do it in the same room or same place, but you can support each other in the process. And then secondly, reflect on the following questions. A, what do I need to stop that relates to my work? Paid work and unpaid work. Jerry, for example, she loves cooking on Sabbath. She loves getting cookbooks out and making these dishes, and it's great. I enjoy eating. She enjoys cooking. I don't like cooking. Cooking is work to me. I do not cook on Sabbath. If it's my turn to cook, we're going out. Okay? So for her, so what's work for you? Paid or unpaid? It's a principle, not a law. Secondly, is what activities create rest and delight for me? Again, what creates rest and delight for me may not be what creates rest and delight for you. But God's given you this gift to enjoy His world, creation, people. And then thirdly, how can I structure my Sabbath to help me see God's goodness and miracles all around me? Do you know there's miracles going on all around you? Actually, Sabbath, how can I structure my Sabbath to cultivate that these miracles and goodness is happening to me around me? So since we're doing this as a community, all of us together, I'm going to ask us to step out a little bit, all right? I'm going to ask, worship team, you're going to come forward, all right? I'm going to ask you to take 2 minutes to 3 minutes. And I want you to turn to somebody near you, all right? They will not bite. Hopefully friend or family. If you don't know the person, introduce yourself. And I want to ask you to answer number one, when do you think what day might work for you? And then choose A, B, or C and just share it with that person, okay? That's all. So just turn where you are for a minute or two, and I want you to share number one, what day you're thinking about might work, and then pick one of the questions under number two and just share that with a person. Some of you who are a little more introverted, be courageous.
Yeah, we can hold them up.
Okay, I have a shirt here. Okay.
$10 if heroin imports.